Volume 1, Number 12. Joseph is appointed husband of the Virgin. I see a rich hall with a beautiful floor, curtains, carpets, and inlaid furniture. It must be still part of the temple. There are priests in it, including Zacharias, and many men of every age, from 20 to 50 approximately. They are all talking in low but animated voices. They seem to be anxious about something I do not know. They are dressed in their best clothes, which seem to be new or just recently washed, and they are obviously dressed for some special feast. Many have removed the piece of cloth covering their heads. Others still wear it, particularly the elder ones, whereas the young people show their bare heads. Some dark blonde, some brown, some black, only one auburn. Their hair is mostly short, but some wear it long down to their shoulders. They do not all know one another, because they observe one another inquisitively. But they seem to be akin somehow, because it is clear that they are all concerned with the same matter. In a corner, I can see Joseph. He is talking to a hale and hearty elderly man. Joseph is about 30 years old. He's a handsome man with short and rather curly hair, dark brown like his beard and his mustache, which cover a well-shaped chin and rise towards his rosy brown cheeks, which are not olive-colored, as is normal in most people with a brown complexion. His eyes are dark, kindly and deep, very serious, and perhaps somewhat sad. But when he smiles, as he does now, they become gay and young-looking. He is dressed in light brown, very simple, but very tidy. A group of young Levites comes in, and they take up position between the door and a long, narrow table, which is against the same wall as the door, which is left wide open. A single curtain hanging down to about 20 centimeters from the floor is drawn to cover the empty space. The curiosity of the group increases. It grows more so when a hand pulls the curtain to one side to admit a Levite who is carrying in his arms a bundle of dry branches on which one in blossom is gently laid. It looks like a light foam of white petals, with a vague pinkish hue that spreads softer and softer from the center to the top of the light petals. The Levite lays the bundle of branches on the table very gently to avoid detracting from the miracle of the branch full of flowers among so many dry ones. Whispering spreads in the hall. They all stretch their necks and sharpen their eyes to see. Zacharias, who is near the table with the other priests, also endeavors to see, but he can see nothing. Joseph, in his corner, gives a quick glance to the bundle of branches, and when the man he was speaking to says something to him, he shakes his head in denial as if to say, "Impossible," and smiles. A trumpet is heard beyond the curtain. They all become quiet and turn in an orderly way towards the door, which is now completely clear as the curtain has been pulled to one side. The high priest enters, surrounded by elders. They all make a deep bow. The pontiff goes to the table and begins to speak, standing up. "Men of the race of David, gathered here at my request, please listen. The Lord has spoken. Glory be to him. From his glory, a ray has descended, and like the sun in springtime, it has given life to a dry branch, which has blossomed miraculously, whereas no other branch on earth is in bloom today, the last day of the Feast of Dedication. And the snow that fell on the mountains in Judah has not yet melted, and everything is white between Zion and Bethany." God has spoken and has made himself the father and the guardian of the Virgin of David, who has him alone as her protection. A holy girl, the glory of the temple. She deserved the word of God to learn the name of a husband agreeable to the Eternal One. And he must be very just to be chosen by the Lord as the protector of the virgin so dear to him. For this reason, our sorrow in losing her is alleviated, and all worries about her destiny as a wife cease. And to the man appointed by God, we entrust with full confidence the virgin blessed by God and by ourselves. The name of the husband is Joseph of Jacob of Bethlehem, of the tribe of David, a carpenter in Nazareth in Galilee. Joseph, come forward. It is an order of the high priest. There is a lot of whispering. Heads move round, eyes cast inquisitive glances, hands make signs. There are expressions of disappointment and relief. Someone, particularly amongst the older people, must be happy that it was not his fate. Joseph, blushing and embarrassed, moves forward. He is now near the table in front of the pontiff, whom he has greeted reverently. Everyone must come here to see the name engraved on the branch, and everyone must take his own branch to make sure that there is no deception. The men obey. They look at the branch gently held by the high priest, and then each takes his own. Some break it, some keep it. They all look at Joseph. Some look and are silent. Others look and congratulate him. The elderly man to whom Joseph was speaking before exclaims, "I told you, Joseph, who feels less certain is the one who wins the game." They have all now passed before the pontiff. The high priest gives Joseph his branch in bloom. He lays his hand on his shoulder and says to him, "The spouse the Lord has presented you with is not rich, as you know, but all virtues are in her. Be more and more worthy of her. There is no flower in Israel as beautiful and pure as she is. Please, all go out now. You, Joseph, stay here. And you, Zacharias, since you are her relative, please bring in the bride." They all go out, except the high priest and Joseph. The curtain is drawn once again over the door. Joseph is standing in a very humble attitude near the priest. There is silence. Then the priest says to Joseph, "Mary wishes to inform you of a vow she made. Please help her shyness. Be good to her, who is so good. I will put my strength and my manly authority at her service, and no sacrifice on her behalf will be heavy for me. Be sure of that." Mary enters with Zacharias and Anna of Phanuel. "Come, Mary," says the pontiff. "Here is the spouse that God has destined to you. He is Joseph of Nazareth. You will therefore go back to your own town. I will leave you now. May God give you his blessing. May the Lord protect you and bless you. May he show his face to you and have mercy on you. May he turn his face to you and give you peace." Zacharias goes out escorting the pontiff. Anna congratulates Joseph, and then she goes out too. The betrothed are now facing each other. Mary, full of blushes, is standing with her head bowed. Joseph, who is also red in the face, looks at her and tries to find the first words to be said. He eventually finds them and a bright smile lights up his eyes. He says, "I welcome you, Mary. I saw you when you were a little baby, only a few days old. I was a friend of your father's, and I have a nephew, the son of my brother Alpheus, who was a great friend of your mother. He was her little friend, because he's only 18 years old. And when you were not yet born, he was only a little boy, and he cheered up your sad mother who loved him so much. You do not know us because you were only a little girl when you came here. But everyone in Nazareth loves you, and they all think and speak of Joachim's little Mary, whose birth was a miracle of the Lord, who made the barren old lady blossom wonderfully. And I remember the evening you were born. We all remember it because of the prodigy of a heavy rain that saved the country, and of a violent storm during which the thunderbolts did not damage even a stem of heather, and it ended with such a large and beautiful rainbow that the like has never been seen again. And then, who does not remember Joachim's happiness? He dandled you, showing you to his neighbors, as if you were a flower that had descended from heaven. He admired you and wanted everyone to admire you. A happy old father who died talking about his Mary, who was so beautiful and good, and whose words were so full of wisdom and grace. He was quite right in admiring you, and in saying that there is no other woman lovelier than you are. And your mother, she filled your house and the neighborhood with her songs, and she sang like a skylark in springtime when she was carrying you. And afterwards, when she held you in her arms, I made a cradle for you. A tiny little cradle with roses carved all over it, because your mother wanted it like that. Perhaps it is still in the house. I am old, Mary. When you were born, I was beginning to work. I was already working. I would never have believed that I was going to have you as a spouse. Perhaps your parents would have died a happier death if they had known, because they were my friends. I buried your father, mourning over his death with a sincere heart, because he was a good teacher to me. Mary raises her face little by little, taking heart, as she hears Joseph speak to her thus. And when he mentions the cradle, she smiles gently. And when Joseph speaks of her father, she holds out her hand to him and says, "Thank you, Joseph." A very timid and gentle "thank you." Joseph holds her little jasmine hand in his short and strong hands of a carpenter, and he caresses it with an affection that expresses more and more confidence. Perhaps he is waiting for more words. But Mary is silent once again. He then goes on. "As you know, your house is still intact, with the exception of the part that was demolished by order of the consul, to build a road for the wagons of the Romans. But the fields which is left of them, you know that because of your father's illness, much of the property had to be disposed of, have been rather neglected. For over 3 years the trees and the vines have never been pruned, and the land is untilled and hard. But the trees that saw you when you were a little girl are still there, and if you agree, I will at once take care of them." "Thank you, Joseph, but you have your work. I will work in your orchard in the morning and in the evening. The days are getting longer and longer. By springtime, I want everything to be in order for your happiness. Look, this is a branch of the almond tree near the house. I wanted to pick it. The hedge is so ruined that one can enter anywhere, but I will remake it solid and strong. I wanted to pick it because I thought that if I should be the chosen one, you would have been pleased to have a flower from your garden. But I was not expecting to be the chosen one, as I am a Nazarite. and I have obeyed because it is an order of the priest, not because I wish to get married. Here's the branch, Mary. With it, I offer you my heart, that like it, has bloomed up till now only for the Lord, and is now blooming for you, my spouse. Mary takes the branch. She is moved and looks at Joseph with a face that has become more and more confident and bright. She feels certain of him. When he says to her, "I am a Nazarite," her face becomes bright and she takes courage. "Also, I am all of the Lord, Joseph. I do not know whether the high priest told you." "He only told me that you are good and pure, and that you wish to inform me of a vow, and that I must be good to you." "Speak, Mary. Your Joseph wants you to be happy in all your desires. I do not love you with my body. I love you with my soul, holy girl given to me by God. Please, see in me a father and a brother, in addition to a husband. And open your heart to me as to a father, and rely on me as on a brother. Since my childhood, I have consecrated myself to the Lord. I know this is not the custom in Israel, but I heard a voice requesting my virginity as a sacrifice of love for the coming of the Messiah. Israel has been waiting for him for such a long time. It is not too much to forgo the joy of being a mother for that." Joseph gazes at her as if he wanted to read her heart. Then he takes her tiny hands, which are still holding the branch in blossom, and he says, "I will join my sacrifice to yours, and we shall love the Eternal Father so much with our chastity, that he will send a Savior to the world earlier and will allow us to see his light shining in the world. Come, Mary, let us go before his house and take an oath that we shall love each other as the angels do. Then I will go to Nazareth to prepare everything for you, in your house if you wish to go there, or elsewhere if you wish so." "In my house. There was a grotto down at the bottom. Is it still there?" "It is, but it is no longer yours. But I will build another one for you, where it will be cool and quiet during the hottest hours of the day. I will make it as much as possible identical to the older one. And tell me, whom do you want with you?" "Nobody. I'm not afraid. Alpheus's mother, who has always come to see me, will keep me company during the day. At night, I prefer to be alone. No harm can befall me." "And now I am there, too. When shall I come and get you?"
"Whenever you wish, Joseph."
"Then I will come as soon as the house is ready. I'll not touch anything. I want you to find it as your mother left it. But I want it to be bright and clean, to receive you without any sadness. Come, Mary, let us go and tell the Most High that we bless him." I do not see anything else, but I feel in my heart the sense of confidence that Mary feels. And thus ends this excerpt from the poem of the man God, and may he bless you.